Thanks for tuning in and welcome to the Jerry Jones Direct Radio Show, hosted by Jerry Jones. Each and every episode is guaranteed to increase your profits and decrease your stress, so you can enjoy dentistry more than ever before. Welcome to the show.
So what do you do in a practice like yours where you are talking about these, you know, holistic, comprehensive approach to dentistry, not just drill, fill, and bill, move them on through, but this comprehensive approach where you're going to sit down, you might spend a half an hour or an hour with a patient. What are some of the things that you guys intentionally do to speed up trust and to enhance, you know, your relationship? Because obviously that's key. I hear this from dentists all the time. Oh, patients don't really, you know, all they care about is their insurance and their money. And I'm sitting there going, no, that's not the case. That's a reason they give for not liking you. That's right. What it boils down to. So what is it that you guys do? You brought up Renee and nutritional protocols. That's something that's so rare in a dental practice. I mean, that's like unheard of. So I'm sure that helps, but it probably has a big impact with some of the high fear patients, or the ones that are, you know, maybe a little afraid of x-rays and that sort of thing. But what are some of the things that your team does and that you do to build that trust?
Yeah, let's talk about that. And I'd like to get back to the nutrition part in our talk before we end, because that's perfect. Really important. I think it all starts with that first phone call. Or it may start even with your website. You know, what does your website look like? I mean, have you spent some money to make an attractive site that brings people in, that starts that process, and then the first phone call. So in the first phone call, if you're calling as a new patient, you know, our front desk person who handles the new patient coordinator, she may be on the phone for an hour. I mean, that's just unheard of. So we want to know who that person is. Is this the right fit for them? What are they really looking for? So we're going to delve into all that before they walk in the door. And then,
can I stop you right there? Because, yeah. I mean, I've looked at tens of thousands of phone calls, data from phone calls, length of call, you know, who answers the call, scoring the call, all that. So I've looked at tens of thousands of those things. It's rare I see a call go more than 7 or 8 minutes for a new patient. Right. I know exactly what she's doing, and obviously she's very good at it. What can you tell us a little bit about what's being said or discussed on a phone call with a new patient who hasn't even given you a dollar yet to win them over and start that trust?
Well, I said, I think it starts with is asking them questions, and we always get the feedback. You know, no one ever asks me questions. You know, why did you pick up the phone and make this call to us specifically? What are you looking for? You know, what is your goal? What has been your experience in the past? What have been your, you know, good experiences or bad experiences? We want to hear it all. And then based on that, we try to see if we're a match. You know, if we come to an agreement, hey, we're a match, I think we can help you out. Let's set up an appointment. We're going to send you some forms. You know, it's a lot of information. But we want to know as much about you as possible, because this is in your best interest. The more we know about you, the more we can help you with. So that all happens before they even walk in the door.
Brilliant.
And then when they come in for their first appointment, it's an hour and a half to 2 hour workup. So I just don't understand. Well, I shouldn't say it. I do understand this idea of getting 50, 75, 100 new patients a month. We couldn't handle that. And I want to find 25 new patients who are on board, want comprehensive care, and it increases, and you know that it's all based on what's the lifetime value of that patient.
Yeah.
And I think ours is much higher than most people, because we spend that time. And sometimes she'll spend an hour and find out that person's not a good match, or they find we're not a good match, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I can say, well, geez, we're wasting a lot of time on the phone, but I think it's worth it, because that time spent up front is going to be saved on the back end.
Yeah.
The worst thing is you don't want people a revolving door. So we want to make sure, and we're not 100%. Sometimes we go, we saw a red flag. We, you know, we're caring, we're compassionate. We want to help that person, and it may not have been the best choice. So it's just a process. And then we take all those records, or I do, and I do a very comprehensive treatment plan, and then I spend another hour with them in front of the video, in front of the TV, in front of the computer, showing them all their records, their x-rays, you know, so they can see it on a big screen and allow them to just talk. Again, why are you here? Tell me your story. You know, I've read all your notes, but I want to hear it from you. And then I just, at that point, that's where I'm trying to establish the rapport and relationship with them, because I'm going to have a long-term relationship is what the plan is. And I sort of also want to feel out if it really is a match. So rather than just a person who can fill my schedule.
Yeah.
So, and by the way, we don't take insurance. We're all fee for service.
Yeah. So you're spending, again, how much time are you spending with that patient in a new patient exam on average? I understand some will be higher amount of time. Some will be lesser amount of time.
Yeah. It can be an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Okay. So I think that's really important. So, I mean, to build trust takes time, right? And there are things you can do. You can compress time. You can compress, you know, you can create an experience that compresses time, which it sounds like you've done. But the front end work that your team does when that new patient calls, I can't place a high enough emphasis maybe on the fact what she's doing up front is just saving everyone time down the road. If it's a bad fit, you're going to learn about it in the worst way, which is when they show up and waste your time for an hour, right? So it's better to have that person screened out up front. And in your model of practice, I think it's brilliant. So really, for you, time equals trust. And so the more time you're able to spend with them and let them talk, and I think that's a very key component, is asking questions and letting them talk. You're learning about them. You're finding out things about them that, you know, most dentists would never get to, maybe 7-8 visits down the road. You're finding that out in the very first visit. So I think that's probably a big component. Are there any other, what is your team doing during this time? You're there for an hour, hour and a half with this patient. What has your team done, aside from your front office person, your scheduling coordinator, what have they done to interact with this patient and to help build trust?
Well, they're going to see most of the team members during that process, during record taking. They're going to see the hygienist. So everyone's the same thing, building rapport, talking to them, you know, just inviting them. It's like they're coming into my home. I mean, this is our home. So we want you to feel invited. I mean, if you walk into the front, you know, it looks like somebody's house. We got a couch there. We have teas and we have supplements up there, and it's very open. There's no, you know, no window opening, close, no sign-in sheet, you know, and we make it clear to the front whoever's up there, make sure you're looking at everybody on the schedule, look at their photos. So when they walk in the door, you can greet who they are. You know, the worst thing is obviously people want to feel like you know them. You know,
you don't want to start off a podcast by saying, I can't pronounce your last name. You don't want to.
Well, you don't want a patient that's been here for 20 years and you can't remember their name.
Yeah, exactly.
It's or like, are you a new patient? No, I've been coming 20 years.
Wrong question. Yeah. More like, are you a new staff member? That's the question I should be asking you.
Right. So, well, if they're asking that and it's been an old staff member, then I say we failed also. So just making that connection. And, you know, it takes more time, but I don't want to have that patient who calls and says, you know, I'm new in town. Only thing I want is a cleaning. That's all I want. I don't want a new patient workup. I said, well, then this is not the right fit. You know, you may just need a cleaning. Well, I've been going to the dentist every 6 months. We understand that. But in your best interest, we want to do the full evaluation. It's for you, not necessarily for us, but in your best interest. Because we know at the end of that, we're going to give you a good mark and say, yeah, you know, your hygiene's good, whatever the previous dents you're seeing, they did great work. Or we might surprise you and tell you something you didn't know about. I mean, very few patients know about an airway issue. I mean, very few. And so when we put that cone beam up there and they show them their narrow airway and we show photos of the back of the throat so they can see their malum potty, they're like, wow, I didn't know that. So that then leads to another series of questions. How's your sleep? Do you snore? Does your spouse complain? So now we're down a whole nother path that they, well, what does the dentist have to do with that? Well, I'm glad you asked. Let me tell you how we're involved in that. We're actually probably the primary provider for something that can treat you in a way that's more holistic. And we're going to get to the root cause. We're not going to recommend slapping on a CPAP machine, although that's still the gold standard. And for some people, we do actually send that way, especially if they have severe sleep apnea and they're overweight. You know, they're just, you know, one heart tick away from a heart attack. So we want to make sure they get taken care of. But again, do I expect that they're going to just jump on it and say, yes, get me in here right away? It's all planting the seed. If they don't do it now, we've planted the seed. By the way, I did write a book. It's called Stop the Snore. It's all about sleep apnea and the dental solutions to it. And there's also a chapter in there by Renee on the nutrition, just to educate people. And that has been, and I tell you what, for your listeners, dentists.
I want you to talk about this. I want you to talk about the effect it's had. This is totally unprompted, by the way, my dear listeners. Gene and I did not discuss this beforehand. But I would love to, because I already know what your experience is. I know, because this is what happens when you put books out. So what happened?
So I spent a lot of time, as I was just explaining things to patients.
Yeah.
So now when I suspect that there's an airway or breathing or snoring issue, I said, let me tell you a little bit about it, but I want you to take this book home and I want you to read it. I'm thinking, initially I thought, yeah, you know, they got so much else to read. They got emails and other books they haven't read. Mm-hmm. I get calls sometimes the very next day. I stayed up all night and read your book. I want to schedule treatment right away. And I wasn't really involved in it.
And how much does my insurance pay? That never comes up, doesn't it? It's not an issue, right?
Most of the time, not. I mean, yeah. You're always going to get some of those. And, you know, that also then is another opportunity, I think, to educate patients. So what's important about your insurance? What is it that you're kind of stuck on that and that mentality? And would you be open to the fact that we're talking about your health and the fact that your insurance really is not that concerned about your health? I hate to surprise you, you know, and then they'll go, yeah, you're right. Yeah, they don't. I said, it's a hassle, but I know you got to deal with it, but
yeah.
And you probably have a deductible and it's not going to matter. So let's just talk about you and let's talk about your health. What's the value of that? What's it worth over a lifetime? And let's make this about you and let's make it an investment. You invest in other things, you probably a nice home, a nice car. Let's invest in you. So this is really important. So it just, I think once you do that, you start to open up the path for people to really kind of let go. Hey, you know, no one's ever asked me all these questions. You must really care about me. I said, yeah, absolutely.
Why do you think other dentists don't get this concept you're talking about? Because to me, I mean, this is frankly, it's salesmanship 101. You know, you've got to spend time with your prospect. You know, I mean, if your dad would tell you that, you know, he never sold an insurance policy to someone that didn't trust him, right? So yeah. he probably was a fantastic influence, maybe unbeknownst to you at the time, about getting to the point where, you know, listening to people, let them talk and let them and begin to understand where they're coming from so you can build rapport and get them to ideally either accept or reject your proposal, whatever that proposal might be. I don't get why dentists are so like, oh, I only have 10 minutes to spend on a new patient. You expect to sell a 4,500, 5,000, 10,000 in 15 minutes? I mean, what are you, Gandhi? I mean, that ain't gonna happen. You know,
it doesn't happen when you buy a house or a car, does it?
No, I mean, you know, to me, it goes back to the more time you, the doctor, the more time your team spends with your patients, the more they think that you care because you're spending the time, the more believable it is that you care. And that trust just gets, the bond gets stronger and stronger and stronger. Time equals trust. And so, you know, I think that's a real big message that you're sending here. I think it's a really important one. And obviously it's been very, very successful. Your book, what else has been an offshoot of your book? So you've got obviously speed to conversion. You're converting a prospect, you know, very quickly. What else have been some of the benefits of being an author and being published?
Well, I've gotten offers to come speak at different presentations, you know, and I'm doing other offers to, you know, do a blog post or, you know, podcast. So it's opened up some other things, even to come speak at local organizations. It's a, you know, I network with that. You know, when I go to a networking meeting, everyone's handing out their cards. I'm handing out my book.
You got a book. Yeah, baby.
I'm like, hey, here's my card.
Yeah.
And they go, wow. Like,
wow, you wrote a book?
And I, the thing is, it's not a big deal. You know, right. You know, oh, you wrote a book. I mean, I'm not a New York Times bestseller, but anybody can write a book.
Just, yeah.
You know, of course it took me almost 40 years to write it, but
I finally, by the way, when you're ready to do your next book, whatever book that might be, and maybe Renee's, I know Renee's got a book or 20 in her as well. So maybe the next book, you know, it's just transcripts of you having conversations with patients, explaining different situations and scenarios that can be turned. I mean, you just hit the iPhone record button and record away and have that transcript. Yeah. Here's your book. I mean, you know, and you can even, there's lots of ways to do books, but you know, docs that talk a lot, they have many books that they could be publishing every year on different topics because they're talking about stuff all the time. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I have that idea. It's from, and I kid, but I told my wife I'm going to call it From Womb to Tomb. She said, and that's probably not a very favorable. I said, well, how about Conception to Resurrection? So I want to talk about how dentistry plays a part in that. It's like, what happens pre-conception in terms of nutrition, and this is where Renee plays a part, is that nutrition will then lead to potential or not, or healthy or potential problems in dentistry. So a child not getting good nutrition, or the parents not having good nutrition, and then you have a difficulty labor, the child's not getting breastfed, they're not being fed the right kind of foods. So this is what's leading to this crazy exacerbation for the need for orthodontics. When I was growing up, almost no kids needed orthodontics. Now every kid's an orthodontic. And they're extracting teeth, they're retracting the jaws, creating airway issues. So we got to get back to the basics. What did our predecessors do? You know, if you look at the work of Weston Price, he showed clearly that in these other cultures, nice, wide, broad jaws, you know, because they were breastfed, they ate, you know, good, healthy foods and had to chew their food. So that caused the stimulation and growth of the mandible and the maxilla. We don't see that. And I'm a victim of that. I was not breastfed, and I was given soft foods to eat. So I have this narrow jaw. So I had four teeth taken out and then went into braces. So here at almost 66, I'm in appliances to expand my arches, open up those extraction sites, and I'm going to put implants in there. Wow. So one, you're going to improve airway. Two, you're going to improve oral function. And three, the benefit, you actually get a better profile. You look better. I mean, the facial aesthetics improve. So that's not the primary reason I did it, but I'm looking for
overall. Come on.
but I also am doing it. I tell you, Jerry, why is because I need to show my patients how important this is.
Yeah.
I can't have that conversation with somebody and they go, your face is kind of narrow. What are you doing? I said,
right.
So, yeah. So that helps also. I think walking the talk makes a lot of difference. And, that's going to be the next book, is how can we prevent this craziness, not just in the need for orthodontics, but how about dental care? What can we do? We talked a little bit in the beginning about prevention. What can we do to prevent the need for dentists? So,
right.
I mean, for most dentists, they don't want to do that. They don't want to be out of business. But I think you made it clear there's money and a livelihood to be made in prevention.
Yeah. And I think it's a good time to transition over to that. I mean, in your opinion, is prevention profitable?
Yes. It is. I mean, because there's a lot of things you can do. First of all, within any time soon, you're not going to see this need for treating periodontal disease. You have a lot of patients as they're getting elderly. They had large fillings put in. Their teeth are cracking, so they need crowns. And you can say crown, is that prevention? Well, it is prevention. It's preventing the loss of that tooth. So taking an old filling out that's cracked and putting in a new filling is not prevention, because that's going to just cause that tooth to fracture. And then they may end up losing that tooth. So, and then nutrition, that's the part where Renee plays an important part, is nutrition is really the key. Dental disease to me is not a fluoride deficiency. It's not necessarily poor brushing and flossing or not using the right, whatever mouthwash they're marketing on TV.
Right.
Nutrition's far more important. Now, I'm a dentist. I'm not going to say stop brushing and flossing. You need to do that. And I experienced this actually early in my career. And I remember clearly, I had these two twin sisters. So similar genetics. One was super meticulous. Brush, floss, mouthwash, everything. Every time she came in, she had cavities. She still had gum disease. The other one was very negligent. Never did. What was the difference in the two? It was clear. Diet. One was very overweight, and one was healthier and ate a nutritious diet. So that kind of helped me confirm where I'd already, the path I'd already gone down. So,
yeah.
But I think when you combine the two, so I say, what can we do local? Good hygiene. What can we do extrinsically? Lifestyle, sunshine, walking, exercise. What can we do internally? Good nutrition. Mm-hmm. You know, we now know a good, healthy gut microbiome supports a good oral microbiome. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that we need to teach our patients. So what is that going to evolve into? Does that mean we're going to all be out of business? No, I don't think so. Not anytime soon.
No.
But I think dentists become scared and they're like, well, and I hate this kind of onesie twosies things, like we treat one filling here or one crown there. Let's look at the big picture. What can we do to help that patient in terms of establishing good longevity overall, but also good function orally? Well, we are the primary practitioners for things like oral systemic disease, airway health, so proper jaw function. So who's better at than treating, say, migraines, headaches, TMJ pain? Who's better treating airway, breathing issues, snoring issues, sleep issues? We're the primary practitioner.
Yeah.
And we're not always included in the medical side.
You've painted a very broad picture of opportunities on the prevention side. And, you know, I saw the proof and it really kind of hit me with one of my members. Oh, I don't know. It's been, I think, 5-6 years ago. He sold his practice and he had built a practice that was a prevention-based practice, a traditional prevention where the heavy focus on hygiene, heavy focus on, as an example, he referred if he had patients that needed dentures, implants, pretty much any service like that, ortho, was all referred out. His focus literally was prevention and, you know, crowns and, you know, and fillings. And he made an absolute killing, a fortune in his last 5 years in practice. And that was going from being broke. And in 5 year period of time, he was able to retire because he just went back to the basics and created a strong business model on prevention. So it's there, you know, you can get, it's so easy in dentistry to get confused and confounded and distracted with all the shiny objects out there.
Absolutely.
Technology, the machinery, the latest, greatest protocol for this or that. And I think it's so often dentists just lose track of what's really important. And that's the individual in the chair in front of them at that point in time. And what can I do as the dentist to help this person improve their life? You know, and I think, you know, going through the different areas that you just did, I think it's invaluable. So let's talk about nutrition. How have you integrated nutrition, this idea, the practice of nutrition, into your dental practice? And what has it meant what does the outcome look like? So obviously it's key to everything. But how did it get started and what does the outcome look like today after you started, you know, really integrating this into your practice?
Well, that's always been a personal interest myself. In terms of keeping myself healthy, you know, especially in the practice of dentistry, it's a pretty stressful job. So yeah. I knew that I had to exercise regularly. I had, you know, lifestyle choices are extremely important. And we talked about yoga, like, you know, how important that is for your structure because we're bent over all the time. Mm-hmm. And then just good diet and nutrition. So, and probably to top that all too is sleep. We have to sleep. We're pushing ourselves. We're not eating well, poor diet. We're not supplementing. And I'm speaking generalized for just the health field itself. And then you expect to come in and work an 8-hour day nonstop in a stressful situation. Your body can't put up with that. So it started out as a personal thing. Then I thought, well, this is something we need to start educating our patients about because they really don't know. And, you know, patients all the time are saying, why am I getting cavities? I mean, I come in here regular. What's going on? I said, well, let's look at your hygiene. I go, you know, your hygiene is pretty good. Something's breaking down. Some of it's you got old restorations and they're going to break down no matter what. But let's talk about your nutrition. And that's, so we initiated that in the practice. And then when my daughter came on, we took it on in a bigger way. So she was able to really help with patients. You know, it's not just diet, but, you know, what kind of supplements are you taking? Mm-hmm. What kind of things are really going to help? So we know, bottom line, like for healthy teeth, you're going to need vitamin D3. You're going to need vitamin K2. You're going to need some kind of omega-3 oil. These are things that help teeth grow, help teeth stay healthy, help bones stay healthy. What about gums? Well, you need vitamin C, you need CoQ10. So initiating those things and letting patients know not just to go and pick stuff off the shelf. So we started to bring stuff into the office. So we have it available here. So we're not, and that's not our premise is not to become a supplement company or a supplement, you know, we're not a vitamin store, but find that if it's convenient for the patient, we can get it right here. So, and so we're going to make it convenient for them. And so we're constantly talking about, and it's interesting over the years, what happens now is patients come in asking, well, I read this or something. What do you think about that? And I go, well, I'm not sure. Let me look into it. Or, I just read about that. Or let me speak to Renee. She's up on all the latest stuff. And so we're constantly just educating. And again, it's, Jerry, it's like we talked before. It's just having conversations. We're just like you and I are talking right now. It's like, hey, we're just here. I'm going to learn from you. And hopefully you'll learn from me. Because I have patients that bring me stuff all the time. I'm like, yeah, I know about that. No, I haven't heard about that. But I tell you what. Before you leave the office, if I get a chance, I'm going to go look at it on the internet and we'll have a conversation. If not, we'll talk about it the next time you're in. So I never have that sort of, hey, I'm the doctor. I know everything, you know nothing. It's sharing information. And I think it's a great opportunity today with the availability of information. Of course, it can be quite overwhelming. And sometimes they come up with stuff that really doesn't make sense to me, but I never judge them or make them feel bad. I said, look, I'll look into it. And then we can have a conversation.
Yeah.
So I think that's just important. I think every dentist should, if they don't have the availability to put a nutrition counselor in the practice, they should have someone they can refer to. Mm-hmm. And at least they should be up to date and educate themselves about the importance of it. So if they really want to initiate, I don't think you can have a prevention program without that.
Yeah. I love the concept. I really do.
I hope you enjoyed the show. Hey, Jerry's giving away a practice growth program at his website right now. JerryJonesDirect.com, valued at $293. Grab your free copy today. Just go to JerryJonesDirect.com to learn more. And be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple iTunes or your favorite streaming service so you never miss an episode. We'll catch you next time here on the Jerry Jones Direct Radio Show.